Welcome to The Range Brief with Blackwing. I am your host, Mark Gore, and I'm here today with our very frequent guest, Joe King. And Joe, you brought a very special visitor for us today.
I did. I am so excited that I am not the special guest today. I'm the tag-along guy. But today with us is our first, as far as I'm concerned, awesome guest from outside the Blackwing shop. And I'm sitting to my left with Greg Elifritz, one of, I think, the most influential trainers in our industry. He's an author, he's a trainer, he's a world traveler, and somebody that I look up to, and we base a lot of our training around the things that he writes. And so, Greg, do you want to tell us a little bit more about yourself? You can speak more intelligently than I can, clearly.
Hey, guys, thanks for having me on. My name's Greg Elifritz. I run a company called Active Response Training. I'm a retired police officer from Central Ohio area. Did 25 years as a police officer, and 13 of those years was a full-time tactical training officer for the department. So I teach classes on all different types of topics, gun classes and knife fighting classes and impact weapons and empty hand fighting and emergency medicine classes. And since I've retired, I've been traveling all around the country and teaching classes. And I also do worldwide travel and write a lot about travel safety. So got a Amazon bestseller travel safety book. So I write about travel safety. I write about gun topics and I teach.
Awesome. Yeah, there's a lot there. It's pretty neat if you enjoy this conversation and want to follow Greg, there's a lot of avenues of hearing about what information you have to pass along.
So, yeah. Yeah.
So if you could see my face, I'm like a little kid who's starstruck every time Greg comes around. So I'm super excited.
Just starry-eyed staring at Greg. Yeah. So the topic we skimmed over a little bit, the topic this week, month, is going to be situational awareness, which is something that is important for everyone, gun owner, non-gun owner. It's a useful tool or skill set to have in your bag. So Greg, to start off, what is situational awareness?
I think the best definition of this I've ever heard comes from Tom Givens, who's an amazing firearms instructor, travels all over the country teaching classes. And Tom's definition of awareness is knowing who's around you and what they are doing. It's simply that easy. Do you know who is around you and what they're doing? If you can do that, if you can be aware of those things, what people are doing around you, you're well ahead of any kind of criminal attack. You're going to be in a good place to recognize any kind of potential problems and deal with them. So the problem we get with that is, how do you teach yourself to become more aware? Another wonderful instructor, Craig Douglas, has a saying, awareness isn't a verb. You can't aware. You have to teach yourself to look for certain things to build your awareness. And that's where it falls apart for a lot of people.
Absolutely. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, definitely a desirable skill set. How would you advise people to improve that skill set?
Sure. The normal advice that somebody gets in this is keep your head up, keep your head on a swivel, don't watch your phone, don't get distracted.
I've told people
that. That's all viable stuff, but it doesn't really teach you how to be more aware. It prevents you from being unaware, but it doesn't actually clue you into looking at people and figuring out what they're doing. So I teach a lot of classes, and what I found the best way to do it is to gamify it. If you play little games, it keeps your mind into the mission of becoming more aware, and it's kind of fun. So I have several different games that I teach my students to play to build those awareness techniques. The first one I got from Jeff Cooper's book, The Principles of Personal Defense. Very thin book, but it's an excellent read if anybody's interested in this. And I call this one the awareness game. And it's just really simple. Whenever you're out in public, there's a chance that you're going to come across someone you know, a friend, family member, coworker, at the grocery store, at the post office, at the mall, wherever you're at. if you're aware of your surroundings, if you truly know who's around you and what they're doing, you are going to recognize those people before they recognize you.
Sure.
So you play a little game and you track it with a desk calendar. And every time you're out in public and you see someone you know before they see you, you get 1 point. Anytime you're surprised out in public by someone that you didn't recognize first, anytime you're at the grocery store and somebody taps you on the shoulder and it's your next door neighbor or whatever, sure, yeah, you lose 10 points.
Oh, okay.
And but look at the end of the month. If you're in positive numbers, you're generally doing pretty well. And it's something simple, easy, everybody can do. And it keeps your head in the game a little bit.
Yeah, doesn't take a lot of work in tracking either.
Yeah, it seems super fun, and I just feel like you ruined everywhere I'm going to go from here.
Thank you. Yeah. Now, you know, you're going to be ambushing me the next time I'm in Blackwing. You're going to be hiding around the corner to sneak up and tap me on the back and say, I got you. I got a plus one, and you're down 10.
That's so fun.
It should be like minus 20 if someone recognizes you and you have no idea who they are.
Yes. Yeah. Another thing that I do just to keep people's mind in the game and looking is I'll tell people to look for something unique. And it doesn't matter what that is. But if you're looking for a particular thing on each person you see, that gives you the idea to evaluate each person. So it could be an example. You could look for people in red shirts, or you could be looking for people with turquoise rings, or people with gold watches, or, you know, people with funky colored shoes. Could be anything that you want, but you're just looking for those things. And that gets you staring at people and evaluating them. It's kind of even better if you look for things around that person's waistband or hands, because that's where any potential threat is going to produce a weapon from. So if you're already looking at their hands, then that's something that you can get a little bit of extra time to buys you some time to act instead. So I like looking for watches, you know, look for Rolex watches, look for, you know, rings, something like that. Look for belt buckle, those kind of things. It could be something, you know, look for cell phones clipped to someone's belt. You know, that gets you looking for bulges on belts, which are also good survival strategies for you. So that looking for something unique.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of us in the gun world that are in the concealed carry world, often I feel like look for the bulge on someone's right hip.
Yes, you're looking for the 5'11 pants and the clipped knife to the pocket and the flashlight and the Wilderness Tactical belt and all the stuff that lets you know that somebody might be carrying a gun.
Absolutely.
But usually you're not really worried about those kind of people because they aren't going to be the ones to attack you. But that is a good practice to get into, to look for that kind of stuff.
And for somebody that doesn't live in our world, I think that point drives so hard home as, you know, a range guy who are dealing with this, you know, the public who are bringing firearms in. I know it, right? And same with like law enforcement, you know, our eyes go to hands and belts and bags and things, but such a powerful point to somebody who doesn't live in our world of that waistband and the hands like that, that is just such a powerful topic. I really see the value in that. So, you know, if you don't live in this world, I think that's the most profound, easy thing you've said yet.
And the other thing that we can do with this is you can also gamify this with your kids once they're a little old enough. Yeah. You know, you can say, okay, today we're looking for red shoes. Anybody you see with red shoes, you pointed out to mommy and daddy. And that gets your kid looking too. And that gets you an extra set of eyes, you know, that you may not see something that your kid may see, and you're training good habits and, you know, creating your own little extra set of eyes to see something that you may not see, you know, especially distracted. If you've got multiple kids, you're at the grocery store and, you know, you're putting bags of groceries into the car and you're trying to get your car seats all set up, you know, having a kid say, oh, mommy, I see a guy with a mustache, you know, there it is, you know, get you a chance to look around.
You could use them as sentries for the first game, too. So, like, keep out for anyone you might know.
Set them up on the outer perimeter and, as a guy with no kids, I'm feeling kind of bad now. You know, I don't have my own little army that to look out for me. I got to pay more attention.
I know. That's the reason Joe's, he's working his numbers up. So he's got the,
I am.
Got the surrounding population.
I can see like the risk too. Like you have to pick your topic because you can't say, hey, you know, like point out something, you know, and yell it really loud. Like, hey, look at that super huge belly. Or whatever, you know, I got to really think through this.
Right. The other thing that I had to think of is, you know, when we're out in public, we spend a lot of our time in cars. And how do you become aware when you're driving? You know, I'd like to think that most people are at least aware of the traffic around them and pedestrians walking in front of them so that they don't get into any kind of crashes. But how do you look for something more than that? And I learned this from Dave Spalding, another great firearms instructor based here out of Ohio. And Dave, in his book, talks about a technique he calls commentary driving. And you can only do this for a very short period of time. And I would suggest only doing it when you're alone in your car, not with other people. But basically, you are going to create a verbal narrative of everything that you see as you're driving. As you're driving along, okay, the light is turning yellow now. There is a blue car pulling up on my left. There's a woman in a white shirt walking in the crosswalk. I see somebody pushing the button to cross the street. There's somebody begging with a sign over to my right. Just a constant running narration of everything that you're seeing. Sure. Now, when I do this, I find that it's mentally draining and I can't do it for more than a few minutes at a time. Sure. But a couple minutes of that each time you're driving, that kind of gets you in the habit of looking around and looking for things other than cars that are going to hit you. Helps you along when you're in the driving mode too.
Sure. Yeah. That's why I've, consistently just stuck to cursing at idiots.
There you go. Yeah. Come up with the best curse words, the best descriptive curse words for each of the morons that cut you off in traffic.
Great. So we talked about what is situational awareness, how I think hopefully everyone realizes why that is important, right? To be aware of potential threats.
Right.
And then you've gave us some great ideas for ways to sharpen that skill set. Now, what do you do with that? So you see a bulge on someone's right hip that maybe, like Joe and I were talking earlier, maybe he's walked into the coffee shop wearing a motorcycle helmet and he's got that. And maybe he's got, not that you profile, but he's got a lot of tattoos or, there's something looks like, hey, this might be a potential threat.
Sure. What's the next move? Yeah, that's the next problem. Once you're noticing everyone around you, the next thing that we've got to teach people is to be able to recognize potential pre-assault indicators. So we don't really care about someone who's not out to harm us. So what indicators does a bad guy give off right before he attacks? So it doesn't do any good to notice the bad guy, but not recognize that he's planning on attacking you. So there's several things that I teach my students with this. We can look at appearance cues, we can look at movement cues, and we can look at eye cues, and I'll talk to each of those. I think the movement cues come in first. I call these predatory movement patterns, and I think these are going to be your first indication that something's not right. So a deliberate approach in a crowd. Usually if you're in a crowd of people, most people try to give each other the most space possible when walking past. Yeah. If you see someone on a beeline direct intercept course to you, that's not usual in a crowded situation. So that direct approach in a crowd should be a warning sign. Beyond that, the standard predatory moving pattern, anyone following you, that you should notice that and take some evasive action if you see that. But it could be other movement patterns that are a little bit less noticeable. There may be someone following you in a parallel pattern from like maybe the other side of the street. They aren't, directly following you from behind. So they're mirroring your movements. Those things you want to look for. We're seeing more and more attacks with multiple criminal attackers, big groups of attacks. And when we see these groups cutting off your potential escape routes, that should be a big warning sign that something's not going right here. If we see three or four people approaching me and they're surrounding me, yeah, or blocking any potential escape paths, that should be something that you're looking for there. So any of these predatory moving patterns, direct approaches, following, mirroring, cutting off escape routes, that should be something that we should definitely be looking for first. And that's going to give us the indication from the farthest distance away. We should pick those things up,
sure,
quickest.
Absolutely.
Greg, I have a quick question. In your study, in mainly like with multiple people, do those people kind of travel in groups? Are they splitting up and coming back together? I think of in the store, you know, one of the red flags in a store for me is four guys come in and they all go four different directions. Is there any like truth to that in the real world?
Yeah, you're seeing all kinds of different stuff with that. The major thing that I'm seeing is this is organized behavior. So this isn't random. They have planned what they're doing. So that might be they all gang up on one person. That might be they all split up so that they can best take over everybody in the store. But there's planned organized motion, and it isn't the same every time. It kind of depends on the scenario, what the attackers are trying to accomplish, but you're seeing some type of organized plan being played out there.
I don't like the idea of criminals training and planning. That I'm liking this less and less. The idea of back when, hey, I'm the only one trying to train and pay attention. You're saying these guys are really studying and really training.
I wouldn't say training like in the context that you and I train at the range, that kind of stuff. But they're thinking about this stuff, and they're thinking about how do we avoid cameras? How do we avoid the police? How do we optimize the amount of money that we're stealing, goods that we're stealing? They're thinking about these kind of things, and they're watching, you know, what now that everything is on video and all of these videos are up on YouTube, they're watching other large criminal groups do these big large scale attacks, and they're learning from them. Oh, you know, we just saw one last week where they kind of took over a large department store, and they knew that there would be security guards that would confront them, and they brought big canisters of bear spray for the security guards. So as soon as the security guards rolled up on the group, they pepper sprayed them with this big massive bear spray container, and then they were free to loot the store. So they're learning, and they're working on that kind of stuff. And it's something, the paradigm is shifting. You know, 15 years ago, when I'm teaching gun classes or empty hand fighting classes, you could pretty much bet that it'd be a single attacker or maybe two attackers. Now we're seeing more and more large group attacks, and it's becoming exponentially harder to fight through that should you be the person targeted. So these awareness stuff that I'm talking about now, absolutely critical, because the only way to win a confrontation against 10 dudes is not to be there and to pick this attack up very, very early and get out quickly.
God, I really appreciate you doing all the homework. Thank you, Greg. You're welcome.
All right. So what other indicators do you have?
So besides the predatory movement patterns, other things that you're going to see really, really quickly is how or what the person is looking at, how they're looking or what they're looking for. And so we see a couple of big warning signs. The first one that you'll see, and this is very late in the game, this is immediately prior to the attack, you will see the criminal looking around. He's looking behind him. He's looking all directions. He is looking for escape routes, where he's going to go when he takes your stuff and where he's going to run to. He's looking for anyone who might stop his attack, police officers, security guards, people watching. He's looking for witnesses. You know, he's doing that last final check to make sure that there's no one going to interfere with his attack and that he knows what he's going to do after he completes his attack. I'd been teaching this several years when I first noticed this in real life. I was in grad school, I was a cop and was taking grad school classes at night at Ohio State University. And I was walking through the Oval, big area, open area with intersecting sidewalks. And there was this girl playing a guitar on a park bench. And I walked past her. She had her head down playing the guitar and didn't even notice me passing. And as I'm walking, I see a guy run up and hide in a bunch of bushes near this girl. He's looking at her. It's just getting dark. There's people around, but it's not overly populated. Mm-hmm. And I thought, this is kind of strange. Why did this guy run up and hide in the bushes? And my natural reaction was, this guy is a friend of hers and he's going to jump up and surprise her and it's a joke. But I started looking the guy and she's clearly college age female. This guy's in his 50s. He looks homeless. I notice he's wearing multiple pairs of pants like homeless people do. He doesn't look like he's a friend of this woman playing the guitar. And so I keep walking and keep watching these two. The girl doesn't see anything. He gets up from behind the bushes and makes a beeline directly for this girl. And she doesn't see anything. As he gets about 10 feet away, at this point I had stopped. I'm probably 30 or 40 yards away, but I'm stopped and looking at what's going on. And as he's approaching the girl, he gets about 10 feet away and he looks around. He does this complete 360. It looks like his head's on a swivel looking for potential witnesses. And he locks eyes with me and he stops dead in his tracks and turns around and walks back towards the bushes. I'm sure he was dead set on attacking this girl or taking something from her. Sure. And he was doing that final witness check and he saw me and I spoiled his plans. The girl never saw anything the whole time. I tell this story in my classes and I get women say, well, did you go back and tell the girl? And I said, no, you know, think of this from her perspective. You know, she didn't see any of this going on. And then she has some strange guy walking up to her to say, hey, there is somebody about to attack you. It would have gone very poorly. So he walked away. I walked away. The girl wasn't attacked. We're going to call it a win. But just seeing that looking around was absolutely insightful when I saw it live.
I bet. Sure.
Beyond looking around for witnesses and escape routes and cops, we also often see criminals do what's called target glancing. They're looking at what they want to steal. And this research actually comes from police officers. And when criminals try to steal police officers' guns, there have been some academic studies going all the way back into the 60s and 70s about how the criminal will look at the gun, stare at the gun, stare at the holster, figure out what buttons or snaps he has to undo to steal that officer's gun. And in the law enforcement community, that's a big warning sign when you're dealing with someone and they're staring at your gun. Well, we see the same kind of thing happen when they're staring at a victim's purse, trying to figure out how I'm going to get the strap off of her arm, or they're staring at the wallet that is in someone's back pocket and they're thinking, how do I knock this guy down and get the wallet? They will spend some time to stare at the target of what they want. And that's another chance for you to notice that and take evasive action.
Absolutely. I got to say, I love that about your articles and your teaching is just talking about all the data. Mm-hmm. You know, that's so, so neat, so unique from what a lot of other people do. I know there's been instances where you've looked at like 150 incidents and then said, hey, here's a common theme.
I'm just a geek and I read a lot. That's all.
I'm a data guy, so I love it. I'm all in. That's great. So do you have any more?
Yeah, some other big ones that we see. These are a little bit harder to describe, but Master Instructor Craig Douglas categorizes all of these as grooming cues. They are physical actions a criminal might take to mask his anxiety. That's criminals get nervous before they make their attacks. This is a high stress situation. And they know if they appear stressed to their victims are going to pick up on that. That's not normal. So they have to do something to mask the anxiety that they're feeling. And that's often exhibited as touching the face, the head, the neck, or the hair. They will rub their head. They will brush their nose with their hand. They will cover their mouth. They will touch their face, their neck, their chest, that type of a movement. Psychologists think that this is a physical masking, trying to prevent the victim from seeing their facial expressions. Okay. When they do this, or it might also be some type of a self-soothing gesture to calm themselves down. So that touching kind of thing of their face, any kind of brushing the hair, the face, or the neck, that's a grooming cue, and that's something you want to look at real intently.
Dude, it makes so much sense. My mind goes straight to like an athlete, a baseball player in a batter's box, touching his chest, rubbing his nose.
That's the exact same thing. Yes.
Shooting up the free throw. I mean, I can just picture it.
That's it. The other touching kind of element we want to look for is they will often pat their pocket or their waistband to make sure that their weapon is where they think it is. Yeah. You know, I'm sure a lot of the people listening to this podcast are concealed carriers. And, you know, an example I often say, if you remember back the very first time you ever carried a gun concealed, you were constantly touching it, making sure that your cover garment was over it and it wasn't exposed. You're making sure it's in the place that you think you're at. The criminals are doing the same thing. If I know that I'm going to have to draw a gun from my waistband to stick it in someone's face to steal their wallet, I don't want to fumble that draw. So before I get to that point, I'm going to check and make sure my gun's exactly where it is. And I'm going to do this. So if we see a padding of the waistband or a padding of a pocket area, that should also be kind of a warning clue.
That's awesome. It's kind of like the opposite of I've heard if you're out in public, like foreign travel, like the book you talk about, and this might even be in your book, which I've read, but it's been a while.
Thank you.
but they say like, don't pat your pocket where your wallet is.
Exactly.
I do that all the time.
One of the big things you see with pickpocketers is a scam that they will use accomplices with a fake wallet or an actual wallet that just isn't. The accomplice will pick up a wallet from the ground, hold it up in the air and say, did anyone lose their wallet? Everybody around then reaches and taps their wallet to check to make sure it's there. And that lets all the pickpockets know exactly where that person's money is.
Genius. Some smart people out there.
You know, if you do these, you know, most of us get pretty decent at our job when we've done it for a while. That's these criminals' jobs. That's their job to steal your money. And they've been doing it for years and they refine their techniques and get better and better. They're not dumb. Some other things that you might look at there, these are less obvious than some of the other ones that I spoke about, but kind of something you want to look at. We talked about the target glancing and looking around for witnesses. You might also want to be aware of, you know, the stereotypical 1,000-yard stare of someone who might have some mental illness problems. You know, someone who's staring but is unfocused. That might be indication of someone who's on a lot of drugs or is mentally ill. And that doesn't mean that that person's going to attack you, but it does mean that their actions are somewhat unpredictable and you should probably keep an eye on them because you just don't know what they're going to do. So, you know, that unfocused, unblinking stare, it may not even be at you. That should be kind of a warning clue for, and, you know, even if it's not, maybe that guy's not going to attack me, but I don't want to come near that guy because I may be the stimulus that sets him off. And let's just avoid that kind of thing.
That guy always gets me 1 point.
Yeah, always. I know that guy. Some other things, you know, we can look at body postures. You know, a more bladed body posture is indicative of someone who's planning on a physical attack. So he's, you know, turning his strong side back away from you. That might be something that you're looking for. Looking for his hands. You know, bad guys often have, you know, are hiding weapons. If the hands quickly go to pockets or waistbands, that's a warning sign that you should be paying attention to.
And I take it these are like stacking, like one might mean nothing, but once you have three or four, then more likely.
You know, I think it's really important, and every article that you ever read about this has told you trust your instincts on this one. But the hard thing about following that advice of trusting your instincts is sometimes, you know, we don't want to offend someone. We don't want to be wrong. We don't want to take some type of evasive action and, you know, be incorrect about it. The way I look at this is if you get the instinct that something's wrong, start looking for these clues that I'm giving you. Look for the person looking around, the target glancing, you know, all of these things that I've just talked about. Those are the physical confirmations you need to let you know that you're making the right decision to get out of there or take some type of evasive action. That's the confirmation you need to mentally know you're right. And so you're right. Absolutely. Any one of these cues by itself isn't necessarily a sign that you're going to be attacked. But when you start seeing multiple of them combined with that feeling that, hey, this situation isn't right, that's the time you need to act.
And it's definitely okay to fail too. I have a, you know, I was in Aruba with my wife on a honeymoon, and we went off of the main strip to find some real authentic food, and it was getting dark, and here comes a guy riding his bike towards us. You know, it's dark, and I say, hey, let's move to the other side of the street. And he sees me and we move across the street. My eyes are on him. I have a flashlight in my pocket because that's all I could bring. And he says, hey, how was dinner? I hope you guys had a great time. I'm sure you're up, blah, blah, blah. Cheers. You know, like, I was so wrong, but it's all right.
Yes. Yes. Better safe than sorry with that one.
Absolutely. Any other cues that you wanted to hit on?
No, I think those are the obvious danger signs that we should be looking for. You know, if we can get people in the practice of looking around more often by playing those games and noticing those types of things that I mentioned, the next step is, what do we do? And we just talked about that. We want to take some type of evasive action. We want to remove ourselves from the situation if we can, so that we're not targeted by victims. You know, it could be something very, very simple. Like Joe just said, walking to the other side of the street. That might be enough to foil that person's plan. You know, Joe mentioned a flashlight, something that I carry very regularly in foreign countries, and I've used it a couple of times. I remember one time I was walking with a couple of people that I was traveling with, and it was in Bolivia. It was late at night. We had just got home from a bar, walking back to the hostel, and I saw two guys that were across the street from us, and they were watching our group walk, and they were both smoking cigarettes, and I saw them at the same time. They both threw their cigarettes on the ground, ground them out, and started walking on a beeline towards our group. You know, so we've got that direct approach in a crowd that I talked about, and I hit them with my flashlight. And
not physically.
I shined the light on them from across the street.
Sure.
And especially in a foreign country, people don't carry flashlights around. The only one who carries a flashlight are cops.
Right, right.
And they instantly turned around and went the opposite direction. But I had no doubt that they planned on some, I don't know if it was a physical attack or some type of a scam or whatever, but they were approaching our group. It's late at night, drunk tourists, you know, but that simple action of shining the flashlight, hey, I see you, I know you're up to something, that dissuaded them.
Yeah, absolutely. What other methods would you recommend when you do see something that you think is a threatening action? It seems like avoidance or escape is your number one, right?
Get out of there. Yeah, get out of there is probably the best. Get to a place where there's more witnesses. I wrote about this in my book. I was actually in Australia, and I noticed that we had some people following us, walking through a big city, and there was a guy on a cell phone mirroring us from across the street, and he was communicating with two other guys who were about 50 yards behind us. He was making these physical gestures, pointing us out, talking to these guys, and it was clear that something was up with that. And I'm my girlfriend didn't notice at the time, of course. And so I'm preparing here, and the guys that were following us, one reached into his pocket and he pulled something out of his pocket. And I couldn't tell exactly what it was, but it was metallic colored and it looked like brass knuckles. And at that point, I shield my girlfriend with my body and I start drawing my knife, and my girlfriend recognizes something's really, really wrong.
Sure.
And she's way smarter than I was. And so she just pushed me into a restaurant that we were passing. Let's go inside here. And that was something I had never even considered. I'm like, well, here it's going to go down. I'm going to, you know, fight these guys right here in the middle of the street. And she realized it was going to go down, and well, let's just go into the restaurant and avoid the whole thing.
Absolutely.
It's like, oh, that's the smart solution there. Rather than getting into a knife fight with, you know, two random criminals, let's just get into a public place where someone's less likely to attack us.
Yeah, avoid words like fillet. Yes, as I've taken in your class with human flesh. God, that still traumatizes me.
Yeah, I think that's probably hard. I think hard for a lot of people, especially if you are trained in self-defense, or like, you know, a trained UFC fighter,
sure,
or something. Sure. You know, some of those people, or you just know what you're doing.
Yep.
I'm sure sometimes people's skills want to come out, but
right. Ego.
Yeah.
And you know, it was just something I didn't even consider, you know. Yeah, it's so obvious. Story. Well, why would I, you know, why wouldn't people, you just walk into this restaurant and they aren't going to follow us in there, you know? And it turns out, you know, thinking on it, I had a day bag. We were walking around the city and I had a day bag full of water and stuff. And it looked very similar to a computer laptop bag. And we were thinking that it was probably just someone trying to do a snatch and grab of the laptop, but all saved by my girlfriend at the time, who was way smarter than I and pushed me into a restaurant.
Such a great story.
Yeah. It seems like you've had a lot of close calls. Is that mostly from traveling abroad?
I spend 2 or 3 months a year in the developing world where I can't drink the water and it's kind of crazy. So every once in a while, it's far less than one might expect given the places that I go to. I mean, I just got back 2 weeks ago from Rwanda and Uganda. Those aren't really top of most people's vacation list of places. Nothing bad at all happened in there. A lot of my travels are to very, very primitive countries, and you'd think that there'd be problems, but happens on occasion, but not with any, you know, great regularity.
That's good. That's good. What other steps do you have in your, obviously, fight if you are cornered? Is there anything else in the medium?
I think everybody has to do a personal assessment of their own abilities and their own psychology. You know, if we look at how we can respond to any of these situations, if we don't catch it early and we can't avoid it, you know, we can fight, we can flee, we can submit, or we could posture or bluff. And each of those could be viable options in some circumstances, depending on how your personal skill set is. You know, I'm not going to tell, you know, the 79-year-old grandma that going to hands is the best choice for, sure, you know, fighting multiple attackers. But some people are able to fight those off, may have a weapon that may dissuade that attack or allow them to prevail. That's an option. Some people, you know, fleeing is a very, very good option. But as we look around, you know, how many folks around us are obese and haven't run since, you know, high school? And those people, you know, the people wearing high-heeled shoes, fleeing may not be an option. You know, so the posturing or bluffing might be an option too. If you're good, verbally adept, you're able to think on your feet well and interact with people, you may be able to bluff. You may be able to pull it off. It happens all the time. But you have to do a personal assessment of your own talents and your own predilections and make that decision beforehand. You know, I don't want to have to, as the punch is being thrown, be trying to figure out, should I be fleeing? Should I be fighting? Should I be submitting, giving up? You know, figure this stuff out beforehand based on, you know, your own personality. And everybody's going to be a little bit different.
Yeah. And we talked about some before too, de-escalating. I feel like not relevant in like someone trying to rob you situation, yes. but it is like someone confronts you, drunk bar
yeah.
guy.
Yeah, drunk bar guy. You know, we see how many road rage kind of things do yeah. we see, that kind of stuff. You know, the simple act of saying, I'm sorry, man. You know, just being able to be the bigger person and say, I'm sorry, whether or not it's your fault or not,
yeah.
that can dissuade it. Give him that win. Let him, you know, play the big tough guy and think he's the stud. You know, I'm sorry, man. I didn't mean to make you mad. I didn't mean to do whatever. That dissuades a lot of stuff. We don't have to get into that. You know, we generally see this with men more than women, the manly ego match, you know, yeah. I'm bigger and badder than you. Sorry, dude, I wasn't paying attention, mm-hmm. you know, something like that. I've got a friend who carries in his pocket by itself, not with his wallet, a $20 bill. And he calls it the My Bad 20. And this is a guy who's been a bouncer at a lot of very high-end strip clubs and been in a lot of physical confrontations. And he carries a single $20 bill in his right front pocket. And if he accidentally offends someone or is involved in something where it gets heated, sorry, dude, my bad. Here's 20 bucks. Go buy yourself a drink. If a $20 bill will stop us from getting our face smashed and being hospitalized, that seems like a pretty good bargain to me. And so yeah. he calls it the My Bad 20. And I think that's a brilliant concept.
That's super sharp.
I'm just, you know, I'm sorry. Hey, man, I'll buy you a drink. Here's $20. And all of that, you know, drunken bar guy aggression is done at that point in time.
You posted a really cool article, I think a month ago or so, from someone else that was the 5 best ways to get attacked.
Uh-huh.
And I thought that was super cool, more relevant yes. in these situations. I wrote it down so I would remember. But it's the best way to get attacked is insult the person, threaten the person, challenge the person, deny. I'm not sure what I was going for there. And then don't give them an exit, which seems right. like kind of yeah. exactly what you were just it's talking the other, about.
You know, giving somebody that face-saving exit is really, really important. Give them a way out. Yeah. So a good book to read that covers these strategies, my friend Nick Hughes, who spent many, many years as a bodyguard for celebrities, was also in the French Foreign Legion, multiple black belt martial artist. He has a book called Be Your Own Bodyguard, and he has several chapters on all verbal techniques to get yourself out of these typical ego challenges that you might see, how to de-escalate that. And it's absolutely brilliant information. Highly recommend it.
That's awesome. Well, we've got just a tad bit more time here. Joe, I'll turn it over to you to give one little situation or scenario, so to speak, and then we can give you a chance to say if there's anything else on your mind too, Greg.
Yeah, I was hesitant to ask this, but I'm going to, you know, insist that you answer. But so oh, no. in all of your travels and in all of your across the country and across the world, give me a really fun example of using situational awareness, you know, applying your skills, you know, where you wouldn't recommend somebody else be doing this.
The don't do this at home story.
That's it. I want to hear it.
I have a lot of those. The one that immediately comes into mind, I was in Brazil and I was traveling for a period of time, about 6 weeks. And there was a girl I was traveling with and she broke her laptop screen. And laptop computers and computer repairs are really, really expensive in Brazil. We were right on the border of Brazil and Paraguay. And there's a city in Paraguay called Ciudad del Este, and it's kind of a lawless smuggling city. But anything is available there. Anything you want to purchase.
Of course you would know this.
Of course. And it's literally 10 miles from where we were in Brazil. But it was in another country that required a visa. So I did some research. And the visa took, you know, a couple weeks to get. And it was $150. And didn't seem like a viable option. And we started talking to the owner of our hostel and he said, well, you know, I know a smuggler who can get you in there.
Oh, no.
And, you know, there's places that'll repair your, you know, computer laptop screen for, you know, way cheaper than you can get it there. So started doing some more research and found that The worst case scenario, if we got caught, the fine was $150. It was the same amount as the visa, and they kick you out of the country. They deport you. Well, you know, we just wanted to go in and get the laptop fixed. So we figure if we get caught, it's the same as buying a visa. We aren't really going to go to jail or anything. So we took this hostel guy's advice and hired this human smuggler to smuggle us over the border to a black market city in Paraguay. So we smoothly went across the border. He had already paid off the border guards. It cost us $40 total. And we go to this huge open air black market. And he waited for us to give us a ride back. And we were on our own in maybe a mile by a mile part of the city that is just, think about an outdoor flea market of nothing but smuggled and stolen goods. And everybody is out to scam everybody. There's no law. It's in, you know, border town with virtually zero laws. You know, rarely in other countries do I have people coming up to me offering to sell me guns, but I had three guns offered to me there. In that situation, you're just around hundreds of criminals and you're standing out because you're the only gringo in the area with a pretty girl, too. That was probably the most challenging situational awareness exercise I ever had to do in real life. But we got her laptop repaired. We got her a new screen. We got back into Brazil. Nothing seriously bad happened in it. Ended up being a good story.
I'm just shaking my head thinking, no way.
Don't
ever.
Do this at home. No. Don't do this at home.
I am not a fit for this.
I'm certain that you just use that as an opportunity to practice.
That's it. It was practice. Skills, yeah, right? This is all, you know, work-related tax write-off. Absolutely, you know, yeah. I get to practice all of the good stuff. I did actually, on that little visit, there was a cop and the cop actually offered to sell me a Taurus 38 for $300. I refused because I know that he would arrest me as soon as I did this, but I did offer to buy his baton right off of his belt, and he sold me his baton for $20 right off of his duty belt. So I have a souvenir hanging up in my gunroom wall of the rubber truncheon that I bought off of a Paraguayan cop in the lawless city in the world.
God, I love it. I'm so glad I asked. Thanks for answering.
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, Greg, anything else that you wanted to cover that you think is important that people listening know before we wrap up?
No, I think that's mostly what I wanted to get across there. You know, pay attention to Tom's definition. Know who's around you and what they're doing. You know, if you have to use those games to build up to the point that you're doing that regularly, that's important. And then pay attention for those warning signs when the people that you see. And I think you're going to be way ahead of the game as far as heading off some of these kind of victimizations.
Awesome. Great.
Yeah. Greg, real quick. If somebody's, you know, interested in learning more about this or you, like, where are some good places they can find you? Because obviously Mark and I pay attention to what you write and where you go, and it's a lot of good info. How do people find you out there?
Probably my website would be the easiest thing. My website is activeresponsetraining.net, all one word, activeresponsetraining.net. Write 3 or 4 articles a week on the website, mostly kind of tactical articles. I've been writing on there for 12 years, so there's about 2,000 articles archived there, all kinds of good information on it. My book is called Choose Adventure, Safe Travel in Dangerous Places. The website for the book is chooseadventurebook.com. You can buy it on Amazon. I also have a travel-specific blog on that site, on the Choose Adventure book, that is mostly travel-related, but of course I bring in, you know, some of the criminal aspects that travelers can be victimized by and that kind of stuff. So the travel related stuff is there at the Choose Adventure book site, and my other one's activeresponsetraining.net.
Beautiful. And the only thing I would add is, you know, unfirearm related, Greg teaches a lot of really cool classes. Most of our staff has went through the tactical first aid class. If you can find Greg anywhere across the country, it's worth every penny that you can pay, whatever the host is charging there. But Greg has a lot of great classes that are not firearm related, and I encourage anybody to take those. We're blessed to have Greg come and teach at our store, and we're honored by it, and we celebrate it. So if you can find him, please do.
Yeah, I teach about 40 days a year all over the country, and I hit Black Wing several several times a year and one of my favorite places to teach. So come see me up in Delaware. I'm up here several times a year and all over the country on other weekends. So I'm probably close within a day's driving distance of almost everybody in the country, at least some time of the year.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's great. Very useful classes, and they fill up very quickly for us. So if you are interested in, hop on. Greg's a popular guy. And I've been trying to sneak into one of your knife classes sometime, but maybe someday I'll get in there.
We'll get you in. You might know somebody.
Yeah, we'll see. Very good. So we've got the places to reach out to Greg or follow him and get his information. As you guys know, you're listening to the Blackwing Podcast. So feel free to like, subscribe, whatever all the other things are in relation to that. And let us know if there's any other topics you'd like to hear about. Maybe someday we could grab Greg again down the road and hit some other topic along these lines.
Absolutely. I'd love to.
It's incredible. He's got 15 pages printed out in front of him to cover. And I think you got to like two.
Yes.
So that shows you how much information research and prep he does for everything.
Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Welcome back to the podcast game, buddy. Thanks for choosing us.
You're getting my first one back, so excellent. Thank you.
Yep, glad to have you.